The PFL is live from Chicago, April 19th, with welterweights and featherweights taking center stage. In the main event, former Bellator welterweight champion Andrei Kereshkov takes on knockout artist Magomed Umalatov. And 2022 PFL world champion Brendan Loughnane looks to start his 2024 off with the bang versus submission specialist Pedro Carvalho. Don't miss the action. Friday, April 19th, live at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN and ESPN+.
The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Welcome to the 2021 MMA Fighting Year-End Awards. And now, your host, Mike Heck.
Well, hello there, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the 2021 MMA Fighting Year-End Awards. I am Mike Heck, your master of ceremonies for this inaugural event. We have done awards in the past, but we have not done it in this kind of a format, so we are very excited to bring this to you for the very first time. 2021 was a memorable year, not just for mixed martial arts, but for combat sports in general. One of the most memorable years that I can remember, and we are going to celebrate some of those incredible moments by giving away five awards. We're going to give away awards for the knockout of the year, the submission of the year, the rookie of the year, the fight of the year, and of course, the fighter of the year will be announced at the very end, the main event of the evening, if you will. So here's how it's going to work. We will introduce each award, we'll run down the nominees, we'll award the winner for each respective award, and then we're going to turn it over to a panel of MMA fighting judges, if you will, who will weigh in on why they chose to vote the way that they did. Some people will agree with who won the award, and some people will disagree, and we'll hear from all sides for all of the awards. So with that being said, let's kick this thing off. Let's get to the awards, and we're going to kick this off with a banger. Just like your favorite party mix CD, you got to start off hot, and we're going to start off with the 2021 MMA Fighting Knockout of the Year.
The nominees for Knockout of the Year are Corey Sandhagen by flying knee over Frankie Edgar at UFC Vegas 18. Yuri Prochazka by spinning elbow over Dominic Reyes at UFC Vegas 25. Sergio Pettis by spinning back fist over Kyoji Horiguchi at Bellator 272. Kamaru Usman by right cross over Jorge Masvidal at UFC 261, Francis Ngannou by left hook over Stipe Miocic at UFC 260.
And the winner is Kamaru Usman for his incredible knockout of Jorge Masvidal in April at UFC 261. Let's hear from the panel about how everybody came to that decision.
Thanks, Mike. And now we welcome in our panel for this year-end awards show. Of course, you know the whole crew. My Arizona brother, Jose Young's there on the left. Down below me, we have AK, the Prince of Positivity from the North, and then Man in the Boards, the best producer in the business, E. Casey Layden. And let's talk about some knockouts, fellas, because KO of the year this year, all across the board on our year-end ballots. I mean, you see it right there. The first place votes all across the board, but the majority coming in, or at least the most coming in, for Kamaru Usman, Jorge Masvidal, too. The rematch, one of the cleanest KOs you will ever see in your life. And Jose, me and you were among the people who voted first place for Usman and Masvidal too. Let's go to you first. Why was that your knockout of the year?
For a few reasons. One, I was there covering it for the site. So I was inside that sold out arena in Jacksonville. And let's not forget, that was really the, that was the first card back with a packed house outside of Las Vegas since what? Israel Adesanya versus Yoel Romero. Like, I'm not really counting the Fight Island fights because at the end, like, especially like the Conor Poirier 2 fight, because that was still limited over there on Fight Island. But this one was packed to the brim with people in Jacksonville. They were just so, they were foaming at the mouth to finally watch mixed martial arts in front of them. This was one of those rare moments where pretty much the whole arena was filled for the first fight of the night, which is rare for an MMA for a UFC pay-per-view. Usually people trickle in for the ESPN prelims and then for the pay-per-view. But this was also a night of violence. Like if you go back and look at all those finishes, this is when Rose head kicked Whaley. This is when Valentina just barreled through Jessica Andrade. Anthony Smith kicked Jimmy Crute's leg into oblivion. Chris Weidman's leg snapped in half. So this was just violent, 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 violent from beginning to end. And then Kamaru Usman and Jorge Masvidal, like, they talked a whole lot of greasiness to begin with. Kamaru Usman was, again, still, you know, he knocked out Gilbert Burns, but he still kind of had that snoozeman moniker tied to his name. This was his first or second fight with Trevor Whitman, and he turned the lights out of Jorge Masvidal to the point where I couldn't hear a person talking to me who was about 4 inches away from me. Someone was talking to me and I couldn't hear them. That is how loud that arena got when Kamaru Usman just, as I said, decapitated Jorge Masvidal. And Jorge Masvidal had never been knocked out like that in his life. How many fights has he had? 50? And this is a man who, fastest knockout in UFC history, knocked out Darren Till in London, stopped Nate Diaz with cut. So this was a man who was just like violent, violent, violent. And then Kamaru Usman, the wrestler, the division what, two, Marty Snoozman, just knocked Jorge Masvidal dead. Absolutely dead in his home state of Florida. So that is why it is number one. Something we hadn't seen. A fighter who is not known for his knockout power. Not a TKO, a knockout, a flatline knockout. And the arena, the environment, the ambiance was just absurd that night in Jacksonville. So that is why it was number one knockout for me. Because just all of those, it was a perfect recipe and it was fantastic. It was a moment I won't forget in MMA.
It is just so cruel how quickly the winds of fate turn in this sport, right? One, you're right. You mentioned the Masvidal knockout of the year a couple of years ago. One year you're winning knockout of the year for one of the craziest flying knee KOs we've ever seen. And then a few years later, you're on the other side of it, man. And,
sometimes and you're the hammer, sometimes you're the nail.
It really is. And the photographs,
more of a grenade.
The photographs that came out of this knockout too are just, when you can spawn that many iconic photographs from one moment, and Jose, you put an amazing compilation together for our graphic for our year-end awards right here. Go look at that graphic, people, if you haven't already seen it. It's just beautiful. It's art. It's Pantera. It's a Pantera album cover. It's vulgar discredit power. It really is. AK, for you, why was this the knockout of the year?
Well, everything that Jose said, but one thing, he mentioned the greasiness, you know, kind of what people were, what they were saying to each other before the fight. And let's say you had never seen Kamaru Usman or Jorge Masvidal fight before, but you did keep up with the hype for this match. Let's say you're some crazy casual, I want to get into the UFC, I want to know about these guys, I'm going to listen to all the press. Something Masvidal had been pushing for so long was, this guy has no power. He said, this guy, I in the first fight, I felt his punches, nothing. He has no power whatsoever. So not only had Masvidal never been knocked out in that way, he was saying that this guy has no chance of knocking anybody out. So to get finished by strikes, and not just strikes, but a one-shot KO, a one-shot no-doubt KO, sweat and water from his hair and face flying everywhere. It was just an incredible statement. And the kind of justice you kind of only get in sports, right? You know, when someone says something, you can't do this, you can't do that, there's no chance you're gonna do this, you're a 10-1 underdog, this is gonna happen. And yet that's why they play the games, right? And it's like, I think a lot of us picked Usman to win. I think all of us thought most likely a decision, if he's ever gonna knock Masvidal, it'd be like he has him down in the fourth or fifth and kind of like, you know, raining down punches on him, that kind of TKO. None of us said he's gonna throw a Rocky Balboa haymaker and just completely rock him. So give some credit to Masvidal as well, because he made this scenario seem even more unlikely. And that's what made the payoff that much more sweet.
Yeah, it is one of those things. You hear all the lead up, right? All the talk of, oh, you know, I wasn't satisfied with how I did this last time. I'm going to do it one better this time. And it's so easy. We hear it so often. It's so easy to just shake that off and dismiss it. But man, Kamar Usman was serious that time. He really did deliver. Casey, I want to bring you in here because second place on our list ended up being Sergio Pettis versus Kyoji Horiguchi, which is a recent knockout we just saw over in Bellator. And actually, Alexander K. Lee, my man over there, voted for this first place as well. That ended up with 3 first place votes. You were in that group. Why for you was that the KO of the year in your mind?
Well, first of all, everything Jose said about the Usman knockout is true. It was an unbelievable knockout, incredibly violent. The crowd was electric that night. The timing for that knockout, just in terms of this, the storylines for these gentlemen's careers was perfect. So I totally get why it's knockout of the year. And for 99% of the year, I was like, oh, nice, that's knockout of the year. I'm already done voting. And then this one main event in Bellator came up. If I was super excited for Sergio Pettis, Kyoji Horiguchi. The Horiguchi, of course, was the champ, but he vacated the belt due to injuries. So no one really believed that Sergio Pettis was the champ yet. He was kind of the paper champ. He was losing that fight. That fight was done. It was like, okay, this is a 50-45 fight. Let's get through it. It was the fourth round, something. So halfway through the fourth round, he's down three rounds. He's losing that round. He listens to his coach. He's like, just go for it. And he throws this head kick from boxing range. And just Horiguchi even getting out of the way of that head kick was really spectacular. But then Horiguchi just makes the slightest mistake and just backs out with his hands down. And Pettis throws this amazing pinpoint, so freaking violent back fist that knocks out Horiguchi. Now, we talk about Masvidal going out cold. Horiguchi might still be unconscious. Like, it was scary. like it was so scary, the knockout. In fact, I was actually upset at the broadcast that they weren't, like, landing a helicopter in the cage to take Horiguchi to the hospital. Horiguchi was out that cold. And it was, to me, like, we've seen right cross knockouts. They look great. Of course, it was Masvidal. The guy who did it was incredible. The knockout Masvidal was incredible. But to me, knocking out Horiguchi like that is equally as incredible. And the high stakes championship fight, losing the kind of the Sergio Pettis storyline, kind of like, you know, this, you know, just living the shadow of his big brother. Now that's gone. And I just think it was incredible. And I wish there was like a co-award, because both those knockouts were just incredible. And I just felt that one needed to be recognized as the top knockout of the year.
Yeah, it's certainly the best Bellator knockout of the year and easily the best non-UFC knockout of the year. And you have absolutely a case if you want to throw it number one. Quickly here, let's go around the horn.
Can we give some credit to, about Casey, you mentioned the coaching. Let's give DeGroove some credit for some. That was some Mr. Burns talking softball level coaching where he's like, you, go out there, do something. And then he knocks him out. And it's like I told him to do that. And it's like, hey, it worked. He just said, do something. You're not doing enough. Do something. And he did. Coach of the year.
You got to love it. You got to love it. Wow. Rufus Sport. Way to go, Rufus Sport. Quickly here, let's move around the horn. I want to just get one word, one sentence answer. Everyone on their ballot had at least one knockout that they gave some love to that a lot of people didn't. For me, it was the big man, the fat man, Chris Barnett, John Volante, spinning back kick like that. How does that not get more love? I cannot believe I'm one of the only people who voted for that. Jose, for you, what's the one knockout you want to recognize quickly?
I mean, it's a lot of, like, because again, like the Corey Sandhagen, Frankie Edgar knockout. The problem with that knockout is it happened, the first quarter of the year? So it feels like last year. So let's not forget that Corey Sandhagen, how long was that fight? 45 seconds, a minute maybe, and threw a flying knee and knocked out Frank Edgar. And like, what's Frank Edgar known for? How tough he is, how much damage he can take, how he can walk through punishment and keep going. And Frank Edgar was coming down to bantamweight to make another run for a title. Corey Sandhagen was trying to, you know, erase that, being put to sleep by Aljamain Sterling by submission. So he does that against Marlon Moraes. So what's he going to do? Gets a flying knee knockout on the chin of Frankie Edgar in front of Dominic. Like, let's not forget Dominic Cruz right away. As soon as he landed that knee, because Dominic Cruz on commentary just goes, that's title shot. That's a title shot. Like if Dominic Cruz, the one, like, you know, this big pessimist that is always negative and is always pointing out the flaws of everyone that on commentary, if he's praising you for a knockout in a fighter in his own weight class, you probably did something right. Corey Sandhagen, any other year is probably one, probably number one, maybe number two, but now he's probably three or four, which is just crazy in 2021.
It's crazy. It was a good year, man. It was a really good year. AK, for you, what do you want to recognize?
Well, first, I just want to say I'm a big Frankie Edgar mark, so that was traumatizing. I did get number two. I know, maybe just to deal with it. In my mind, I'm like I said, it's so long ago, I'm probably remembering it differently. But like I have this image, like it's a samurai duel where they cross and then one guy falls while the other guy just kind of like walks off. I don't think it was like that. I'm pretty sure he hit the mat pretty clearly and then Sandhagen walks off. But it's just such a horrible memory. I just want to shout out Emily Ducote, her knockout of Danielle Taylor, made a few of our fifth, number five spots. And if people haven't seen it, and I'm sure a lot of people haven't, check it out. It's one of the most cold-blooded finishes you'll ever see. Like, she rocks Danielle Taylor with this 1-2. And it's Danielle Taylor's out in her feet. She's about to fall down. But Ducote, without missing a beat, just unloads his head kick right on the button and just annihilates her. And it is amazing to watch. It is horrifying to watch. And it's really, again, probably the best knockout of the year that a lot of people missed.
Casey, what about you?
I have to give Corey Sandhagen more love.
Stop. We don't have to talk about this
anymore.
That's all.
That was just brutal. Unreal. And why I love that knockout so much was because most time when, like, I was talking about the Horiguchi knockout, Horiguchi made a mistake. Pettis capitalized. Masvidal made a mistake. Usman capitalized. I watched that fight. Frankie Edgar didn't make a mistake. Corey Sandhagen just knew, just recognized every move that Frankie was going to do before he did it. That's all it was. And he just timed that flying knee perfect. Frankie was just doing his little jab in. And whenever you throw a punch, there's always a slight opening to get hit. And that's what Corey capitalized on. And that knee was just so incredible. And most of the time when I see spectacular violence, you know, I'm on the couch going, wow. This was the one time of the year when I saw that knockout, I actually kind of shrieked because I was so scared for Frankie Edgar. I'm the biggest Frankie Edgar fan, but, you know, if he loses, he loses. But just I shrieked in horror. I was like, he killed Frankie. I was like, so luckily everyone was safe. You know, he had a headache for a week, I'm sure, and he's back. But so I just got to give Corey Sandhagen a little bit more love.
Oh, man. Luckily, Frank Edgar is alive and well, but it was a violent, violent, brutal year. That has been Knockout of the Year. Back to you, Mike.
Thank you, gentlemen, and congratulations to Kamaru Usman, who is nominated for some other awards as well. Maybe he'll take home multiple trophies. We'll find out later on in the program as we move on to another award. And I know that headlines are normally made with ferocious knockouts, strikes, punches, kicks, if you will. But some of the more memorable moments in 2021 came via submission, including one of the biggest upsets in UFC history, according to a lot of people. So now, the nominees for the 2021 Submission of the Year.
The nominees for Submission of the Year are Vicente Luque with a D'Arce over Michael Chiesa at UFC 265. Anthony Fluffy Hernandez via Armin Guillotine over Rodolfo Vieira at UFC 258. Andre Muniz by inverted armbar over Jacare Souza at UFC 262. Juliana Pena by rear naked choke over Amanda Nunes at UFC 269. Charles Oliveira by rear naked choke over Dustin Poirier at UFC 269.
And the winner of the 2021 MMA Fighting Submission of the Year is Andre Muniz for his inverted armbar submission of Jacare Souza at UFC 262 in Houston. What a crazy moment that was.
Fala galera do MMA Fight, aqui é André Muniz de Pão, na tela do UFC. Porra, tô muito feliz em saber que a minha finalização contra o Ronaldo Jacaré foi eleita a melhor finalização do ano. Só agradecer a Deus, a minha equipe, todo mundo que me dá suporte. Eu sei que eu fiz história em finalizar uma lenda, estou muito feliz e espero continuar representando a bandeira do jiu-jitsu aí no UFC, conseguir grandes finalizações e espero que em 2022 eu consiga ser reeleito novamente com uma grande finalização. Muito obrigado mais uma vez, que Deus abençoe vocês. Was.
Let's take you back to the MMA fighting panel to discuss how this decision came to light.
Thank you, Mike. And now, submission of the year, fellas. And this one was really, we're going to talk a couple different times about votes being all over the board, but this one was really votes all over the board. I mean, the winning submission didn't even get the most first place votes. That actually went to Juliana Pena versus Amanda Nunes. But still, everyone pretty much on our team had Andre Muniz versus Jacare Souza on their list, and that actually ends up getting it to number one. So, AK, I want to go to you first this time, because that was, you were one of the three people on our 11-person panel to vote Muniz Souza for number one. Why was this your submission of the year?
Yeah, I don't know if I'm remembering it wrong, but so this was one of a trio of completely unbelievable jiu-jitsu masters getting submitted. Now, in the Andre Muniz situation, I mean, that's really one jiu-jitsu ace submitting another. But then you also had, of course, Leonardo Santos, Clay Guida, and Fluffy Hernandez, and Rodolfo Vieira. And the Vieira and Santos ones were kind of similar. They kind of gassed themselves out. They looked like they were going to dominate early. Then they gassed themselves out. So those are very identical. You could have had one of those at the top as well. I certainly wouldn't blame you. Muniz, I don't think that was the case. Muniz, definitely there was a sense that he out-grappled, yes, an older, sort of more shop-worn fighter. But we're talking about Jacare Souza. I mean, this guy is known, along with, you know, like Damian Maya, Fabrício Werdum, as being like, these are the guys who have implemented jiu-jitsu the best into MMA. And if you go to the ground with them, you're dead. Like, I don't care who you are. Now, and then, again, like I said, in this case with Muniz, a little different, because now, as people know by now, he is also, now maybe he is now the preeminent MMA jiu-jitsu guy, at least in the UFC. But it was just shocking to see that. And this happened before the other two, so maybe that's why I gave it extra points. Also, he broke his friggin' arm. I mean, this was like, it was not pleasant to watch. It felt like a passing of the torch in the most gruesome way. And so for that reason, again, the name who he beat, again, Jacare, to submit him, and in such a beautiful, gory way, I just couldn't go in any other direction but number one for him.
Yeah, and I think this ended up actually being the only submission of the whole ballot where every single person on the panel voted for it in some fashion. The other ones, one or two people would leave out, but this one just landed on everybody's ballot. And I think for the reason you just mentioned, AK, the brutality, the sheer brutality, the visceral nature of seeing a guy like Jacare Souza, right? We have such a long history with Jacare of being this feared submission artist. To see him get his arm actually snapped in that way, in the way that it did, where it ends his career. He goes out, he ends his career getting his arm broken. It was just an incredible sight, man. But I'll throw it to you now, Jose, because our second place was actually tied, Pena Nunes and Hernandez Vieira, and you voted for Hernandez Vieira. Why for you was that your submission of the year?
Well, basically just take everything AK said about this is the guy, the name, that like just submitting Jacare Souza, like erase Jacare Souza's name and put in Rodolfo Vieira. Rodolfo Vieira has won every grappling tournament, every gold medal you can possibly name, but not just once or twice. Like, this is a man that would go on stretches for like 3 or 4 years, but he would enter a tournament and like, that's a wrap. He's just going to walk away with a gold medal or at worst, silver medal. He enters 10 tournaments, he wins 9 of them, and he's winning by submission. So Rodolfo Vieira is the guy. He is like, all right, I'll put it like this. I was at Andre Muniz's last fight when he won by submission. Can't remember who he won against, but that's neither here nor there. And they asked him, someone in the press asked him, does this make you the best submission specialist in the middle
of
the
division? That was me. That was your boy.
That's what you said. And he said, no, I can't say that because we have someone like Rodolfo Vieira in the division. So the guy that won our submission of the year is already anointing Rodolfo Vieira, the best submission specialist in his own weight class. So he goes out there and fights Fluffy Fernandez, who's lost to, what, Kevin Holland, Marcus Perez. I think he had like an overturned fight because he smoked a bunch of weed. I might have been on the Contender Series. So this is a guy, like, fun, exciting guy, good interview. And he goes out there and submissions Rodolfo Vieira. It was 30-1, him winning by submission. Joe Rogan was losing his mind. I could hear Joe Rogan going ballistic, octagon side and commentary. Like, yeah, Rodolfo Vieira gassed himself out. I don't care. If Deontay Wilder came in and was all of a sudden UFC heavyweight, and he gets matched up with, I don't know who's a really random heavyweight that I can that I who's the Polish heavyweight that just lost. I don't know. It's just
how about Georges Danho? Georges Danho.
There you go. And all of a sudden he gets matched up with one of these guys and he gets knocked dead in the second round. That is the equivalent of this fight. The guy, the best submission specialist, the guy that the winner of Submission of the Year is saying is the best submission specialist, goes out there and loses to a guy who doesn't even have 10 fights, 30-1, to the point where how many times have we talked about Dana White doesn't watch the prelims, so don't ask him about a prelim fighter at the post-fight press conference. Dana White talked about this fight. It wasn't a fight that was on anyone's radar. And Dana White, I asked him about this at the press conference, and his eyes lit up, and he was like, oh, my God, did you see that fight? So the winner of submission specialist calling the guy that lost, that got submitted the best. Dana White actually talking about this fight. Joe Rogan losing his mind inside an empty UFC Apex. Everything's there on the wall. That is why this was my submission of the year, because it is something that I still can't get over. Like when that happened, I was like, good luck being that submission of the year. Wasn't the most spectacular, but it was who he did it to and how he did it that was so just unbelievable to witness.
Oh my, the sight of a passionate Jose Young is just, I love it. I love seeing it. One aspect of this fight too is you mentioned it sort of with the matchmaking. It was obvious where the matchmaking was going with this, right? Like this was a sort of being built to be a gimme win for Vieira to style upon this guy and get that submission. And he almost did it. You look at that first round, mm-hmm. he has in mount. Like he was ready to submit Fluffy and it just didn't happen. And man, that was 31 odds, like you said. I have to say, for me, I voted number one for the other fight that sort of rounded out the three that everyone pretty much put in their ballot. And that was Juliana Pena versus Amanda Nunes. That actually got the most first place votes. Four of us put that as number one on our ballot. And I was stunned. I'm not going to lie. I know the last two knockout or submissions we've talked about were incredibly impressive. And also you just didn't see it coming. But I was absolutely floored once the results came in. I expected Pena Nunes to be the number one. And I'm surprised it just ended up at number two. I mean, you have Juliana coming in there in a fight very few thought she was even going to be competitive in. And just choking out the GOAT with a no-hooks rear naked choke. Like, I don't know what it takes to be submission of the year for some people. But for me, like, this felt like an easy one. And I was blown away that this one just didn't get the credit for number one. Casey, I want to throw it to you, because your ballot was a little bit interesting compared to everybody else's. Everybody was more or less in the same ballpark with a lot of these. You were all over the place, and you actually threw McKee versus Pitbull as your number one. Can you talk to me a little bit about your thought process here?
Pitbull, to me at the time, he was a top five featherweight in the world. He hasn't had a legitimate loss. I'm not counting the Ben Henderson loss because he had a shin injury during the fight. So I'm ignore that as far as a stoppage. But he hadn't had a legitimate loss since 2015. He had just knocked out like a year ago Michael Chandler, and now he was fighting the protege, the mercenary AJ McKee in a highly anticipated, probably one of the biggest Bellator fights ever. AJ McKee finished him with a guillotine. The first time he was legitimately finished in his whole career. It was off a head kick, grabbed the neck, choked him out. Technically perfect. I don't know. I just thought you just submitted Pitbull. I thought that was incredible, and I think that deserved number one. And I know, and I have no issue with anyone giving points to Felipe Hernandez, Pena, and those submissions. But I felt those submissions were just, they were too heavily based on the fact that their opponents were just incredibly tired. And now I realize Pitbull did get hit in the head, so he was probably concussed when he got choked out. But I just think who he did it to and how great a fighter Pitbull is as an MMA fighter, not just a jiu-jitsu specialist, I just think that was number one. And that's why I was actually surprised. I know you were shocked that not more people voted for Pena. I was shocked that I think people kind of forgot how incredible that submission, that guillotine was. Maybe because Pitbull kind of disputed it, maybe. I think that kind of soured a bit, but I thought it was a completely clean submission. And yeah, that's why it's my number one.
And it's hard to ignore that it was the culmination of an amazing tournament. That feather tournament was awesome. And also the entire AJ McKee story, as far as
story,
that could be his last fight in Bellator, right? We don't know. Like, that could be, he might just be winning the title and just leaving, right? Yeah, so this could literally be the end of that AJ McKee storyline. And what a story it's been, because Bellator has tried to home grow a lot of people. They signed a lot of, you know, star Division I wrestlers, All-Americans, champions. And some of these guys have been okay and had careers, but not really panned out on the level as far as like being stars. This guy from day one is like, he's the son of Antonio McKee, respected veteran. Everyone's saying he's got everything it takes. He's going to be champ someday. And they bring him along real slow, just like facing, again, you know, an unrecognized competition for like the first 3 or 4 years. So he's like 12-0, 13-0, whatever. And then they really bring him along the right way. And then to the point where when this fight comes along, we're like, this is it. Like, he's probably going to beat Pitbull. I think that maybe the picks are about 50-50. But a lot of people are very confident that he was going to do it. And for him to, I think, realize it, I think that's also part of what makes the submission.
And he won without even breaking a sweat. Mm. And I didn't realize, we talked a little bit before we hit record. According to my ballot, AJ McKee has back-to-back submission of the year. I think that's incredible too.
Amazing.
And that's one thing I was about to mention is I do wonder if there was a little bit of AJ McKee fatigue, because he won last year with the same category. But it is interesting, the points you mentioned with that fight, because in my eyes, when I look back at that fight and I remember that fight, the submission doesn't stand out to me. It doesn't stand out as a standout submission. It's more of the performance as a whole, right? I don't view that as some crazy submission win. I just view it as a very impressive and crazy performance. And I wonder what that is and
That's how I saw the Pena fight. I didn't see it as a submission victory. I saw that as like just her, Pena, sticking to a game plan and beating Nunes the smartest way possible, is to get her tired and be tough. And that's what Pena did. And that's why I couldn't give Pena that kind of credit for a submission of the year, because I think from a technical basis, it just, in my opinion, wasn't the most technical submission, technically right submission, but I completely understand why would people vote for Nunes, because it's just the nature of who Amanda Nunes is.
Well, last thing on this category, and then we'll move on. One fun thing about submission of the year, always, every year, no, without fail, this always happens for some reason, is it's the one category where we can really sneak in a lot of like under the radar stuff, right? Because really crazy submissions happen outside of the highest levels of the leagues, because you have, you know, good fighters fighting maybe fighters who are not at that level of competition, and you could see crazy things like a Boston Crab or whatever else you want to throw out there. Jose, for you, what was your under-the-radar submission that sort of flew by that you want to mention?
I mean, Mateus Santos, I think that was, that's number two for me if you look at the numbers right there. I can't even describe what he did. So anytime that someone, I've said this in like various other sports too, when like there's arguments over like, oh, who deserves, like when Miguel Cabrera hit for the cycle in Major League Baseball, there was this argument over, does he deserve MVP just solely off of that, even though Mike Trout had like higher analytical stuff. I'm like, anytime you make history, or like it's like, or similar when Russell Westbrook had like the triple, like the average of the triple double for the first time since Oscar Robertson, and there were people arguing should he be MVP. Anytime you make history, I think you deserve to be number one. That is what sets you to at number one. For Mateus Santos, number two for me, because he pulled off something that I've never seen, and I don't even think has a name. It was just this this crazy, smart, like, I don't know what it was. Like, it looked like a bowl of pasta, like all everything like swirled around and twisted. Like, you just looked at a plate of spaghetti. I just have no idea how to describe it. It was like an inverted triangle Kimura on his like Peruvian necktie type thing. I have no idea what it's called. I've never seen it. I probably will never see it again. We wrote about it on MMA Fighting. I'm pretty sure it was a missed fist when it came out. So we, like, the diehard saw it. So I put that number two because I don't know what I saw, and it looked crazy. Similar to AJ McKee when last year, the submission that we had never seen. I don't know what Mateus Santos did, but it looked wild, and that's why it's number two.
I don't know what he did, but it looked wild is the best description you could possibly have for submission.
You mentioned like a Boston Crab. I think, Jose, I think this was almost like a real life like stretch muffler that you would see. Like, because he kind of bends the guy. He's countering an arm bar, and he kind of bends the guy's ankle around his neck. But there's other parts, as Jose tried to explain, there's other parts of their bodies that need to be tied up for this move to work.
Yeah.
And you can't make your opponent do it. Like, your opponent kind of has to go for something, and then you have to like kind of counter in this very specific way. So yeah, if you'll find the clip, it's Mateo Santos and Alexander Volodin. And you see if you can figure it out. It's out there in GIF form. So you can watch it loop
like,
over and over again.
The first time I watched it, I'm like, did he tap out because his arm hurt or his neck hurt? Is his shoulder getting popped up? I honestly don't know where the pressure is involved in this
joke. I think
joke.
It's his ankle.
It looked bananas. Yeah. And I can, like, I'm looking at the, I pulled up the photo now. I'm like, I don't see how his ankle hurts. I can't tell.
AK, you actually ended up voting for that as number two on your ballot as well. Casey, what's your under the radar submission? You got lots of them. Your ballot was full of them. What's one you want to mention before we get out of here?
I'm going to say I want to talk about Mackenzie Dern versus Nina Nunes, the armbar. And it's just for the opposite reason what Jose said, because Jose was like, they were doing something crazy. It's like some Peruvian, you know, it's like spaghetti twister, you know, knots. I wanted to give Mackenzie Dern some shine because it was her armbar finish. I think she got it in, the end of the first round. It was just technically and fundamentally perfect. She got the takedown, went to half guard, side mount, grabbed the arm, just got complete control. I don't even think she even had to throw any strikes. I think it was just 100% jiu-jitsu and MMA match. And a lot of times I think we kind of go for the spectacular or the something we've never seen before as far as submissions. But I just want to recognize that the fundamentals, that's what's important. And Mackenzie Dern's, her fundamentals are so there. And if you do everything like you're supposed to, you will get that arm bar. And she did. And that's why, because there was nothing spectacular about it. We didn't even talk about it that much. Even in our post shows, like, okay, arm bar, Mackenzie Dern, whoa, big deal. You know, but everything was just technically perfect about it. Like if you were like just first day jiu-jitsu, you know, how to do an arm bar, that's what she did. And to do it against someone has so much experience as Nina Nunes, I think is awesome. And Mackenzie Dern.
Hard to argue with that. So many good submissions this year. You love to see it. Back to you, Mike.
The PFL is live from Chicago, April 19th, with welterweights and featherweights taking center stage. In the main event, former Bellator welterweight champion Andrei Koreshkov takes on knockout artist Magomed Umalatov. And 2022 PFL world champion Brendan Loughnane looks to start his 2024 off with the bang versus submission specialist Pedro Carvalho. Don't miss the action. Friday, April 19th, live at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN and ESPN+.
What's up, guys? I'm Evan Turner, co-host of the Point Forward podcast, alongside Andre Iguodala. We got a special series out now, all about our favorite NBA cities, the greatest places to travel, the evolving cultures and cuisines, and some of our most memorable experiences while we were on the road during our many years in the NBA. We talk about Miami, Chicago, New York, and many more. Tune in to Courts and Culture, the Point Forward Travel Guide, sponsored by Hennessy. You can find it on Point Forward Feed on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you, panelists, and congratulations to Andre Muniz for an incredible submission, the submission of the year in 2021. Of course, there's a lot of talk about pound-for-pound greats, the Mount Rushmore of fighters, if you will, but before they can get to that point, they got to start somewhere, right? And in 2021, we had a lot of upstarts, a lot of surging prospects. We are going to give away the award for the very first time. For the past years, this is called the Breakout or the Breakthrough Fighter of the Year. This year, for the very first time, we are going to award a Rookie of the Year. And the definition of this award is for a fighter who fought on the regional scene somewhere around the world and then ultimately got that life-changing phone call to fight in a big promotion, whether it be UFC, Bellator, PFL, etc., making their debut in 2021 and then just creating some memorable moments, whether it's one big win that got everybody talking or multiple wins that moved them up the divisional ladder. So with that being said, here are your nominees for the 2021 MMA Fighting Rookie of the Year.
The nominees for Rookie of the Year are Manon Fiorot, Usman Nurmagomedov, Casey O'Neill, Bruno Silva, Roush Manfio.
And your MMA Fighting Rookie of the Year for 2021 is King Casey O'Neill for her 3-0 start with three incredible finishes. Congratulations to Casey O'Neill.
Hey guys, I just want to say a massive thank you to MMA Fighting for voting me as Rookie of the Year for 2021. It was a great year for me, and I look forward to having an even better 2022 and beginning my takeover of the flyweight division.
And there you go. You just heard from our Rookie of the Year. And fellas, let's talk about it, because this was a brand new category we introduced this year. A controversial category somewhat within the team. We didn't really know the parameters that we were setting, but ultimately it was Casey O'Neill who won it. 3-0. She gets 5 out of the 11 possible first place votes. And so, AK, I want to throw it to you first. Casey O'Neill, why does she come out as the MMA Fighting Rookie of the Year?
Yeah, look, again, as people can see, not number one on my list. I actually had her kind of neck and neck with Manon Fiorot for who was kind of the flyweight, you know, Rookie of the Year. Eventually, I did give the nod to O'Neill. Manon, you can certainly make an argument for her. But Casey O'Neill, I mean, look, she's got finishes. Okay, finishes are always huge. Manon has some of that too. But Shauna Dobson, who was coming off that huge upset of Maria Agapova. So she had a name there. Lara Procopio was 7-1. I was gonna say undefeated. Sorry, it was 7-1. And Antonina Shevchenko, maybe not the best flyweight, but certainly she's had that name and people very highly respected as a martial artist. So for your first year in the UFC to go Dobson, Procopio, Shevchenko and get finishes in all those fights, I mean, that's amazing. I mean, you just say it, it's amazing. The other thing is flyweight, women's flyweight has quietly been one of the busiest, most well-developing divisions in MMA, not just this year, but really for the past couple of years. It's hard for people to view it like that because, of course, Valentina Shevchenko has been at the top for so long and just no one seems close to her. And that's still the case. Don't get me wrong. I think the division is very strong, but it's still the case where the difference between number one and number two is just miles. But her dominance should not take away from how many good fighters are coming into this division, whether it's because they're dropping from 135 or moving up from 115, or again, are being signed by the UFC, like Fiorot, like Casey O'Neill, Miranda Maverick. Miranda Maverick, flyweight, right? I don't know. But a lot of good names. Excuse me if I messed up. But a lot of strong names coming in at 125. And Casey O'Neill just happens to be the best of that bunch. So if you're acknowledging the strength of women's 125, as you should, it is hard to argue that Casey O'Neill is not the leading prospect right now. Again, some of the other names I mentioned, but all these finishes, quality competition, about to fight Roxanne Modafferi next, kind of possibly add a veteran name to her resume, one of the most respected veterans in the history of women's MMA. And who knows what her 2022 is going to be like, but a lot of people are already saying, you know, she's definitely going to be a world title contender. Maybe not soon, but by 2023, depending whether Valentina Shevchenko is still around, or even if she is, could be Casey O'Neill. That's the next compelling challenger.
Casey, I want to throw it to you next, because it was interesting. I had Casey O'Neill on my board as well. I think most of us did for the most part. You did as well. But me and you, it was interesting the way Rookie of the Year, the pockets of voting sort of worked out, because everyone who had a first plate vote more or less grouped up together. There was 5 and then 2 and 2. And the 2 for you and I, we went off the board with the UFC. We went to Bellator. We went to Usman Nurmagomedov. And to me, that was a clear pick, because this is a guy who we have been hearing about for a long time. You talk to any of the AKA guys for the last several years, they've been hyping this guy up for a long, long time. And then he comes to Bellator and he is just a monster right away, right? He goes 3-0. The last two are just first round finishes. And he looks like everything we have been advertised over the last couple of years. Why for you was Usman Nurmagomedov your Rookie of the Year?
I think he kind of fits the description of what we think of as a rookie. He's under 25. How many fights does he have? So he came in, he was about 10-0 on the regional scene in Europe. When I saw his fights, even though you may not recognize the opponent's names that he fought, he went out there looking like, okay, this guy is going to be a future champ, a future top contender. And I'm not trying to like discredit Casey O'Neill or anyone else that may have gotten votes, but simply put, when he went out there, he didn't look like a rookie. He looked like a guy that belonged in contender fights very soon. And I was just blown away how just a well-rounded fighter he is. And at only 23 years old, man. And I feel just, you know, a lot of just, he just, with a lot of these fights for Bellator being, you know, empty casinos in, you know, beautiful Uncasville, Connecticut, we may have just kind of forgotten about it. And he didn't get a lot of, I don't think he really got too many high profile fights on broadcast. They were kind of maybe, I think the first two were in prelims. So I get people just kind of forgot about him in a sense. And just because he's not a big trash talker, you know, we just don't do a bunch of interviews of him. But just on his time in the cage this year, 3-0, three dominant victories, two finishes. To me, it was a pretty easy pick, actually.
I like what you said there, because that description of who a guy who came in and instantly looked like a future champion, that was sort of my thinking as well, of who among this group looks the most ready, the most polished right away, and that was him for me. Jose, I want to go to you next, because your first place vote didn't actually end up even in the top five. We had two people on the staff, Eric Jackman as well, New York Rick, voting for Paddy Pimblett, the baddie. He ends up falling just short, a few points shy of fifth place, so he ends up in sixth. And for you, Jose, why was Paddy your number one?
Well, I think it's a no-brainer. It's pretty obvious that why Eric and I picked it for two reasons. One, we both run the social media for our site, and pretty much Paddy Pimblett is just the guy that people want to talk about. Number two, we were both in New York City for UFC 268. There's a few things that kind of add to this, like, mystique of Paddy being number one. And if we're just talking about martial arts, wins and losses, they're going to be a contender. I have no issue with Casey O'Neill, and I have no issue with Nurmagomedov. Those two individuals clearly had the best year of these quote-unquote rookies in terms of high-level martial arts in the octagon. Paddy Pimblett walked into the ceremonial weigh-ins for UFC 268, and basically the sea parted as he walked through. The New York crowd went ballistic for Paddy. This is a man that was 1-0 and was already being advertised to do a fan meet-and-greet Q&A in New York City. Flew all the way from England. Number two, I went out to eat. I think it was Friday night. It turned out Michael Bisping and Darren Till were in the corner doing their thing with, like, some other people. Paddy Pimblett walked in. Place went nuts. Three of them took a photo as the past, present, and future of English MMA. So anytime you're attaching yourself to fighters like Darren Till and Michael Bisping as, quote-unquote, now you're the future of an entire country in a specific sport, you're probably doing something right. And then finally, for the big one for me, we talk a lot about, like, there's a lot of people out there that complain and they pretend that they're up in arms about fighter pay, which is a very serious issue. And they say, like, they bang on the drums and they say, fighters need to get more money. Fighters need to do this, this, and that. Paddy Pimblett is 1-0 in the UFC, and he has a $1 million, seven-figure deal with Barstool to do stuff for them. He's 1-0, and he's already one of the highest paid athletes on the roster. He lost his Instagram. His Instagram had about 100,000 followers, and Instagram took it down because he was being too over the top. He makes a new one, and he's almost at 1 million. In less than 6 months, he's almost generated 1 million Instagram followers. AJ McKee did all of this great stuff for Bellator, beats Pitbull, who many people consider to be the greatest Bellator fighter ever. He doesn't even have 200,000. Instagram followers. And Paddy Pimblett's almost at 1 million, and he's not even ranked, and he's 1-0. This is basically Sean O'Malley all over again. Like, yeah, you can knock him for level of competition, but the man, people want to talk about him. And what, like, this is prize fighting. We say this 1 million times. Wins and losses are great, but this is a prize fight. This is prize fighting at its best. Chael Sonnen might not be the best fighter. He's the greatest, one of the greatest prize fighters you've ever seen. Conor McGregor just happens to be a combination of both. And Paddy Pimblett, Sean O'Malley's talking about Paddy Pimblett, and they're not even in the same weight class. Like, Paddy Pimblett is the guy to me. To me, it was a no-brainer that he was number one. Like, the fact that he's 1-0, unranked, already has a $1 million contract, already almost has 1 million Instagram followers, and doing meet and greets with the UFC, fans chanting his name when he walks into Madison Square Garden, he's not even fighting. It's the reason why I had Ian Garry on my top five. People are already comparing him to Conor, and he hadn't even fought. So to me, this was very much word of mouth, fans being interested in fighters, making a lot of money for themselves. To me, it was a no-brainer. Paddy was number one.
Oh my gosh. I might need to change my ballot after the fact. You made a compelling case there, my man. It was an interesting category, because the way we define rookie is just somebody who had come from the regional scene and made their debut in 2021 on some form of major show, whether it was Ryzen, Bellator, ONE Championship, whatever you want to throw out. That was sort of the parameters we set. And you made a compelling case just there for Patty, even though he was 1-0. It was sort of the same methodology that I used for putting Alex Pereira up on mm-hmm. Mike ballot as well, I think in the number three spot. Just because, again, it's a guy who came in and really lived up to the hype and made that big debut yeah. in a way that was very memorable. Of everybody we sort of have in this group, let's close it out with this question. Who are you most high on moving into 2022? Meaning, like, who among, whether it's somebody you voted for or not, who among this list do you feel strongly about that they are going to be either a champion or a title contender very soon, or maybe even by this time next year? Jose, let's go to you first.
Probably Casey O'Neill, just because of the depth of the division. I think she has the quickest route, especially if you beat Roxanne. If she beats Roxanne Modifier in Roxanne's last fight in her career, I think that kind of, and plus what this is flyweight, so they're looking for new blood for Valentina Shevchenko. She might get the rocket to the top. So I don't think she's going the best of these top five, top ten, but I think she just has the shortest path. I think Usman Nurmagomedov is, I think, the easiest pick to be a future champion. I just think Casey O'Neill will reach the title fight quicker.
Casey, what about you?
Actually, I didn't even realize it, but I just noticed outside of my top pick, Nurmagomedov, two through five are all female fighters. And that's why I'm going to talk about Erin Blanchfield. I think me and only one other person even put Erin Blanchfield in the top five.
Steven,
but,
yeah.
But yeah, me and Steven are the only ones that are in the top five. Erin Blanchfield is 22. Her two performances, even though she got two decisions, she basically 30-24'd both fights. She was in Invicta, she was a very good grappler, but now she at 22, she looks like she is turning that corner and becoming just an amazing mixed martial artist. And her fight against Miranda Maverick, a person I maybe, like, if she would have won that fight, I would have had her as one of the rookies of the year, but since she lost to Blanchfield, I put Blanchfield in that spot. Blanchfield, I think, is freaking amazing. I love Casey O'Neill. I think Casey O'Neill is a more exciting fighter, but I definitely think Erin Blanchfield is going, in the long run, going to be a much more dominant fighter. And I don't think they're going to rush her too much at only 22, but maybe they will. But I expect, of all the women rookies that we saw this year, I expect Erin Blanchfield to fight for the title first.
AK, who are you highest on heading into 2024?
First of all, I mean, who's going to be a champion? One of the people, our guy who came in second, is already a champion. Paulus Montefio. Somehow we didn't even mention him up until this point. He's already a league champion. He went 4-0 this year. He took out Anthony Pettis, Clay Collard, who beat Anthony Pettis, so he took some of his heat. He was supposed to fight Natan Schulte, the godfather of his child. They were almost going to fight, and he was going to come out of this is after recently coming off a 3-year layoff for Hosh. We'll have Guion later to talk about him a bit more, but his story is just insane, and I just had to bring him up because he finished second and somehow we are just mentioning him now. But he's all technically, again, if we're saying who's going to be the next champion, this guy is already a champion and a millionaire, so the outlook for Hosh Manfio is bright no matter what. He could not fight next year, and I guarantee you he's gonna have a great 2022. He's doing all right. Who I think will get a title shot almost for sure this coming year, I think Usman Nurmagomedov is gonna get in there. I think he's going to fight frequently. He might only be maybe two wins away. I think you easily see him fighting for a Bellator title by the end of the year. So that to me, I would put him at the top of the list. And I'm going to go off the board for a guy who I guess he might end up being the 2022 Rookie of the Year, though I think obviously KSW should count as a major league. So it kind of sounds kind of weird to call him a rookie. But Roberto Soldic has done pretty much everything he can do in KSW. I mean, he just destroyed Mehmet Khalidov. It's a fight he wanted forever, just to kind of take out this KSW legend. I'm sure they have some good challenges and scrape up for him, but he's so ready to come to the UFC. Not that he needs to. Like I said, he's doing great work in KSW. If he doesn't come over, that's fine. But there's a lot of great fights for him in the UFC, and he is so good. I think if he comes over, he's one win away. All he needs is come in, one win, and I think he's next in line for a title shot. So I kind of gave you three different answers there, but watch out for Soldic.
I love it. I love it. I absolutely love it. And I have to agree with you. I mean, Usman Nurmagomedov, to me, he might already be the best 155er in that division right now for Bellator. Like, Patricky Pitbull is the champion. Like, if they fight tomorrow, I'm not sure that I would favor Patricky.
Essentially the Khamzat of that division. Yeah.
Usman's like a 3-1 favorite. If that matchup gets made, I guarantee the opening odds, 3-1 favorite, I think, at least for Usman.
Also, AK, you mentioned House Manfield, who you're right, we totally have not mentioned up to this, winning $1 million. And then, Jose, you mentioned that $1 million deal for Patty as well. Look at that. Two different millionaires already.
Way to go,
on
guys.
The rookie of the year table. Way to go, gentlemen. Just making that
go, funders. Go.
I love it. The cheddar makes it better. Back to you, Mike.
Congratulations once again to Casey O'Neill. And here we go, everybody. Two last awards to give away before we turn the page to 2022. And they are two of the more exciting awards. We're going to start with the fight of the year. We've had some incredible battles. This is one of the closest competitions, in my opinion, that we had to judge and vote on throughout the year. Some incredible fights, some incredible moments, whether it be a fight that only lasted 7 minutes or a fight that went 15 or 25 minutes. Lots of great options to choose from. So here are the nominees for the 2021 MMA Fighting Fight of the Year.
The nominees for Fight of the Year are Justin Gaethje versus Michael Chandler at UFC 268, Usman versus Covington 2 in New York City, New York. Peter Yan versus Corey Sandhagen at UFC 267, Blachowicz versus Teixeira in Abu Dhabi, United Arab Emirates. Alexander Volkanovski versus Brian Ortega at UFC 266, Volkanovski versus Ortega in Las Vegas, Nevada. Max Holloway versus Yair Rodriguez at UFC Vegas 42. Holloway versus Rodriguez in Las Vegas, Nevada. Yuri Prochazka versus Dominic Reyes at UFC Vegas 25. Reyes versus Prochazka in Las Vegas, Nevada.
Here we go. Very tough choice here. Very close vote. The winner of the 2021 Fight of the Year is the main card opener for UFC 268, Madison Square Garden, New York City. What a way to kick off an incredible pay-per-view. Justin Gaethje defeats Michael Chandler via unanimous decision. What a battle it was. Much deserving of this award. Let's go back to the panel and see how this tough decision came to be.
Fellas, Fight of the Year, our penultimate award here. And what a category this one, man. This was this year, man. I mean, these were votes all across the board. I think the top three and really even the top four were somewhat on everybody's ballot. But in particular, that top three, you see it right there. The first place votes, four for Gaethje versus Chandler, four for Peter Yan, Sandhagen, two for Volkanovski, Ortega, also one out there for Prochazka and Reyes. And my goodness, man, this just goes to show what an incredible year this was. And for me, Gaethje Chandler was the easy pick. To me, I know it's a three-round fight and some people fault it for that. And I know it was maybe not the most technical fight and people will fault it for that. But there was no fight over the course of 2021 where I felt so engaged and so on the edge of my seat throughout the entirety of it. I mean, there was no chance that you could take a breath during these 15 minutes. These two men were just going to war in a way that was absolutely astounding. And Justin Gaethje really capping it off with his line at the end of the night saying, you know, if we were gladiators in another time, we'd be doing this with weapons in a coliseum. It was just pure theater, pure magic. And I think at this point, this has to be Justin's, what, like third, fourth Fight of the Year award that he's won for this website? I can't even imagine. But him and Robbie Lawler have dominated this category over the last several years. Jose, I want to go to you because you wrote this article for our website. And also, you were among that Yan Sandhagen contingency. Mm-hmm. Again, very, very close at the top here. Four first place votes each. Tell me a little bit about your Fighter of the Year ballot and why you believed Yan Sandhagen should have gotten the nod.
Part of it is what you said, the three round fight. Five round fights to me always kind of like, that's what tips it in the favor. That's what tips it to me. And Yan Sandhagen, I know like Casey, AKA Mike, and I have done a million preview shows, and Mike's always like, Jose, which fight is just a fun martial arts competition that you don't need a crowd for? And to me, that was Yan Sandhagen. I'll watch those two fight 1,000 times. I think that those are the two most talented bantamweights in the world. I know Aljamain Sterling is the champion. If this was a ranking, if I was on a pound-for-pound ranking, I would put him number one just because he is the champion. But in terms of talent, I think these are the two best bantamweights in the world. I think Corey Sandhagen just got caught with a submission by Aljamain when they fought, and I think that this was, and a lot of people thought Sandhagen beat TJ, and a lot of people, and obviously Jan was on his way to beating Aljamain before that foul. So to me, this was the actual title fight. Corey Sandhagen, Peter Jan, was just beautiful martial arts. Everything they did, like from every they had a counter for everyone's counter, whether it was on the canvas, whether it was in the clinch, whether it was in the wrestling, whether it was in the boxing, kickboxing. It was just high level violent chess. It was beautiful to watch. I was also at this fight, so that, again, that just kind of adds to it. It was in Fight Island, and the crowd was going nuts for this. I mean, every punch, the crowd, every punch, every kick, it was like, it was the setting in that fight was just so fun to be in. I'm at a loss for words. Like, I don't know how to describe this fight. Like, I described it as like live action Beyblades in my write up because it just felt like two tops just spinning around a canvas for 25 minutes, clanging into each other with hoping one of them stops. It was just so fun. It was just high level martial arts. Gaethje Chandler was fun to watch. I got a concussion watching that fight, but it was number three for me just because it was three rounds. It was an awesome fight to watch. It was exactly what we thought it was going to be. But is that even the best fight of either man's career? I don't know. Like, was that fight better than the two Luis Palomino fights, World Series of Fighting that we were at in Arizona? No. Maybe.
No.
Maybe.
They weren't. It wasn't.
Exactly. So it's like Justin Gaethje versus Michael Chandler. Obviously, you're going to have a fight of the year candidate. Like, you could have penciled that in before they even fought. To me, Peter Jan versus Corey Sandhagen was the best martial arts fight that I had seen in years. And I just had so much fun watching it. Hang it in the Louvre. That's what I said. Just make a GIF of that whole fight and stick it in an art museum.
AKA, it brings
a
up
a GIF next to the Mona Lisa.
No, we're getting rid of the Mona Lisa. Let's
get rid of
the
Mona Lisa. We're over that. Yeah.
AK, I love it because this category to me this year really typified the argument for fight of the year as a whole, right? And it comes down to, what do you value most for your fight of the year? Do the rounds matter? Do the circumstances matter? Do the stakes matter? But also, are you more of a brawl fan, or do you just like the pure technical nature of these fights at the highest possible level? I know you also voted for Jan Sandhagen as well. Can you tell me a little bit about your methodology and sort of how you look at the broader spectrum of fight of the year when you're coming to this?
Yeah, part of it has to do with me being such a big bantamweight mark, but not that lightweight's far behind. If you ask me, of course, what are the two deepest, best, most entertaining, most diverse divisions, I'll go bantamweight, I'll go lightweight. One and two in some order. Right now, I think bantamweight has the edge. Lightweight has been the answer for so long, and it could still be, again, if you just go up and down the roster. So, but just focusing on Jan and Sandhagen, I mean, again, it was just the ultimate, for anyone who like maybe was not aware of why we're always saying, man, the bantamweight's the best, the bantamweight's the best, the bantamweight's the best. This fight encapsulated so much of that because, as Jose said, these are maybe the two most skilled, with respect to Aljamain Sterling, these are maybe the two most skilled 135ers in the world. So the two most skilled, the two best guys in the best division, just really going at it for five rounds. Sandhagen with an early advantage, Jan showing off why he is just this computer now. He has this Anderson Silva-like computer where he adapts. He can adapt to anyone, any style, and by the end of the fight, you have no question he's the better man. I mean, he just finds a way to adapt and pull away, and it's just so awesome to watch. So from a technical standpoint, this delivered. From a pure entertainment standpoint, swings and momentum, it delivered. From a statement, storyline, I mean, a lot of people, again, believing that Jan is the true champion. I don't know, again, if this seals that for them. Of course, him beating Aljamain Sterling would be the ultimate vindication if he truly is the best bantamweight. But until that happens, and looks like we'll be waiting for that for a while, this is about the biggest satisfaction you can get is Peter Jan regaining the title, technically becoming a two-time bantamweight champion. I'm sure some people just kind of view it as a continuation of his first reign. But technically two-time. And the only edge, for me, it has over Chandler Gaethje. The round thing, not so much, because I think Chandler made a great point. If it was a five-round fight, his fight with Gaethje, it might not have been as balls to the wall. They might have paced themselves a little. So you really can't divorce it from it being a three-rounder. I think near the end, it gets a little wacky. Maybe it's to some people.
Chandler's like, really playing it up that third round,
And it's like you almost like that. That's you almost. It's almost like a wrestling match. It's like I say, guys, don't break kayfabe. Okay, you gotta. Let's try and maintain the competitive illusion here. But some people might like it more. That's a part of the fight. People might look at that and just be like, oh no, that's why I love that fight. So that again, that's really a subjective thing. I liked just the pure technicality and the competitiveness of Jan Sandhagen. But boy, that Gaethje and Chandler fight is just so wild, and you can't beat that atmosphere.
I think it is a very, very valid point that I think both of you have made now, that for Chandler Gaethje, and I voted number one for Chandler Gaethje, but the crowd played such a big part of that fight. If that fight was in the Apex, it's not the same. It's just not the same. And you know, you can't say the same about Peter Yan versus Sandhagen. Casey, we've talked about the lightweights, we've talked about the bantamweights, the divisions we both, I think all of us here, believe to be the two best divisions in this sport. But then you look at our number three and our number four on our list, and it's the featherweights. It's Volkanovski Ortega and it's Holloway Rodriguez. And you, along with I think most of us, had these four fights in some order on your ballot as well. Hit me with the featherweights, man. I mean, they really did deliver this year.
Volkanovski Ortega was just, even though it was, did Ortega, was that, did that go to decision or did Ortega finally get finished?
Decision.
No, okay, they both actually went to decision. Yeah.
Oh, Ortega finally
that's
made
why
it.
I was, that's why it was so wild, because like Ortega succumbed to Holloway's power. And this time he like got over that hump.
Yeah.
When he fought Volkanovski, he reached the finals.
Yeah. I think what we're going to remember two things from the Volkanovski Ortega fight, just the massive, just punishment Ortega can take in a fight, which is really scary. And it's impressive and fun to watch, but you're like, geez, dude, blocks him. Yeah. I don't know. You got it. You can't take so many shots to the head.
That's two but, now. That's two.
Yeah.
Now
that's two fights in a row, but no, that's no. We'll talk about that later, but it's just a pure entertainment. It's like, oh man, that fight was incredible. But the fact that Ortega should be featherweight champion. He should be. Volkanovski was dead to rights. That guillotine was first a guillotine. Yeah. Then I think a triangle.
Yeah.
I think that is the guillotine. It was in. I don't understand. It doesn't make sense. It was in. Volkanovski somehow got out, and he's still the champ. So that's why that fight was incredible to me, and it was just and beyond just incredible, just martial artists too. And then Yair and Max Holloway. We talk about the crowd. You know, Chandler Gaethje being in front of a sold out Madison Square Garden arena. Holloway, Yair, put that. If it was more than like 26 fans or whatever, how many fans to get in there, put that in a sold out arena. God, that fight just feels so much different. I'm a big Yair Rodriguez mark, and I went in there expecting a very competitive fight. I know a lot of people kind of thought that fight was going to be a blowout for Max Holloway, but I was expecting a freaking war from both gentlemen, and we got it. And it was just two extremely high level athletes in the featherweight division in two completely different fights, both fights. So in both fights, I think all four men went to the hospital. I don't know.
Volkanovski stuck around.
Okay. So 75% of the featherweights had to go to the hospital after that fight. I'm sure Volkanovski took a serious beating too. But just 1 through 5 in our selection. I mean, it's like you can't lose, honestly. It's just, it really comes down to preference. I get it if you want Gaethje. I had Gaethje Chandler as my number 5 pick, but I understand why people had number 1. From just a pure entertainment standpoint, Gaethje Chandler wins every year, I think, just entertainment-wise. But if we're judging the full mixed martial arts aspect, the technical parts of it, just featherweights were just unbelievable this year.
Yeah, I
want to add one thing to what Casey said. So I was actually at Holloway Yair, and I don't want that fight in a giant arena because the way they set that crowd, there were like, I want to say maybe 100, 150 fans in there because they're selling sort of tickets. But they said the way they seat the fans is like this half is Yair and that half was Max Holloway.
It was like a
high school game. They had a bunch of just crazy Mexicans and a bunch of crazy Hawaiians with dueling flags going nuts, and they were just yelling at each other. It was a regional scene when you have like Sean, when you go to regional season, you would see like the old Power MMA versus like Arizona Combat Club,
where the
crowds are trying to fight each other. I don't want that fight in Madison Square Garden. I want that fight with like 150 people where they can individually look at someone and yell at them. That was a lot of fun.
Absolutely. And also, too, I know we don't vote for round of the year. That's not one of the categories we do. But if we do, I mean, round three of Ortega versus Volkanovski is probably right?
All-timer.
Like that is the best round of the year, one of the best rounds you'll ever see in mixed martial arts. A fun thing always happens with these sort of awards, too, with our ballots. I think four votes for most people usually go to sort of the group. And then I think a lot of us like to send one vote out, whether it's a last place vote or whatever it is, to sort of something that we feel like is under the radar and we want to recognize. For me, it was Paul Daly versus Bahamasi, which was the best fight in Bellator the whole entire year. That was just chaos for as short as it was. It was chaos the entire way through. AK, talk to me about your last place vote here. I know you were in Bellator as well.
Absolutely.
Lay it on me. Hit me what this was.
And by the way, the Daly Hamasi fight, like almost, I think it was 10 years to the, not to the day, but the 10-year anniversary of the Diaz Daly fight. Wasn't it like only a few days off from the Diaz
thing, right?
It was like this crazy intentional homage.
The greatest one-round fight ever. Right? Yeah.
And Hamasi and Daly also had these like insane swings. So anyway, yeah, that was an amazing fight for sure. But I had to show some love to Karatanov and Congo. I mean, that fight... Hey, Canadians, by the way, Canadians.
Old man Chuck Hongo getting on the list.
All the Bellator cards are free on YouTube in Canada. So if you're in Canada, guys, you have no excuse. Go find this fight if you missed it. Go find Kongo and Karatanov. It's just such heavyweight fun. Just two old guys somehow digging deep. Like the end of the fight is just insane. It's just digging deep and... really a fight on paper that had all the makings of a snooze fest. You're either hoping for like Karatanov, maybe a quick KO, and that's it. Otherwise you're thinking, oh, Congo decision, like Congo's, I mean, this is gonna, you know, this is how that's gonna go. But these heavyweights, they have a way, especially these guys with experience, they have a way of surprising you. And every now and then something, I just would like Congo, so he's a submission, Congo by submission, like in this year of like, I don't know. I gotta say, guys, go watch the fight.
He lost the first two rounds, right? Congo was down the first two rounds.
Congo was Congoing him. Congo had like the right strategy. Like he was fighting a smart fight. He was fighting well. He was kind of getting back up to the fence, but you know he was defending himself well. And then over the other round. Anyway, but this is heavyweight fun at its finest.
Oh yeah.
And again, if you saw this main event and poo-pooed, as I did, actually, I don't think I watched it live. I think you guys reacted to it, and I was like, well, I gotta check this out.
Yeah,
and so I would.
I think it was me that was telling everyone on the staff, guys, you got. I know you took the Friday night off, but you gotta watch this fight. Yeah,
I remember, guys. I'm sure it's out there.
I remember vividly for this one because I was the one that bit the bullet for the staff, and I was like, I'll do this Bellator. I'll cover this Bellator card. Like no one wanted to cover this Bellator card. I'll go ahead and do it. And that fight was awesome.
Yeah,
that fight
amazing.
Was so much better than it had any right to be. You go below zero expectations, and then you come out like really, you know, surprised and happy. I mean, that was what I think he submitted him at the final second of the second round. Like it was just crazy the way that played out. Both men over 40. You love to see it. Jose, for you, what was the one that rounded out your ballot that you had that nobody else did?
It was the Ponzinibbio versus Miguel Baeza fight. I wasn't at this fight. And I agree with like everything everyone is saying. And I know number five on us was Yuri Prohaska and Dominic Reyes. And that fight was bananas for as long as it lasted. But I vividly remember a lot of Ponzinibbio and Baeza because it was like it was also a lot of the culmination of the storylines for that. Because at the time, Miguel Baeza was an undefeated welterweight prospect. He was beating Matt Brown and Takashi Sato, and he was just like the guy. Like he was how we're talking about Adrian Yanez now at bantamweight is what we were saying about Miguel Baeza at welterweight. Like he was a future top 10, top 5, violent, like how like bunch of performance bonuses in a row. And Santiago Ponzinibbio had that weird blood infection. He hadn't fought in like 3 years. And then he comes back and he gets knocked out by the Leech on Fight Islands. And he was like really emotional in the octagon. And then he gets this young, hot, upstart rookie in Miguel Baez. And this was, I would imagine the UFC is like, well, you know, if Miguel Baez wins, he continues on the streak and he gets a big name. And that fight was just bananas for 15 minutes. And Ponzinibbio won and just immediately started crying. Like that fight had a bunch of just crazy, crazy back. It was a back and forth war that Ponzinibbio, I think, won fair and square. I think that's how I scored it. It showed that Ponzinibbio was still a contender. It showed Miguel Baeza could hang with the best of the best at welterweight. Santiago Ponzinibbio just so emotional after missing so much time and then coming back and getting knocked out. It would just all of those things just added to it. And it was just a very, very memorable scene on that fight. And I can't even remember what card it was, but it was a lot of fun. It might have been the main, it was clearly like the second that fight happened, I was like, yeah, that's just give them 50K now. I can't even remember the rest of the card, but that fight was just so, there's a lot going into that fight that was memorable for me, and it just delivered.
Well, Casey, let's close this category out with you. You actually had two Michael Chandler losses on your ballot. Tell me why Oliveira Chandler was one of the best fights of the year for you.
Actually, yeah, it's interesting. I actually had Oliveira Chandler higher than Gaethje Chandler. This fight, we just learned a lot. It was just, I think the fight was maybe about 6 minutes long, 5 minutes. That was entirely Michael Chandler, almost 10-8-ing Charles Oliveira. And to the point where Michael Chandler, he should be the UFC champ. But he went for that dang guillotine. But, you know, that's what the sport's about. People make mistakes in fights, and the other fighter capitalizes. Gaethje had Oliveira hurt. He got a little too confident of his ground, tried to guillotine Oliveira. Oliveira got out of it, I think, into the round on top. I'm not even sure. But still, coming into that second round, you thought, okay, Michael Chandler is now going to win this fight. And then all of a sudden, Charles Oliveira's got hands. What? What? I mean, Michael Chandler, he went 15 minutes with Justin Gaethje. And then, I mean, not with it was afterward, but Charles Oliveira, you know, just Mr. Little Jiu-Jitsu, former featherweight, knocks Michael Chandler out. It was unreal. It was a great, I think it was a lead as a hook. And then it was just an incredible fight. It's 6 minutes. It's just super high level. Just chaos, and the stakes were incredibly high. And from that fight, the story of Charles Oliveira came about. You know, he was just, you know, we talked about he was just kind of this guy up and down, never consistent, didn't have that heart. And everyone said, yeah, once he starts getting beat up, he falls pretty fast. So I don't think there was, I don't know about you, but like I had zero expectation of Charles Oliveira coming back and winning that fight. And we saw it, and that's why it was my fight of the year, but it was my, I think, the third best fight of the year. So I think it needs to be, I think people kind of talk about Gaethje Chandler, but to me, Oliveira Chandler, that's one of the best Chandler fight this year.
It's such a bizarre year for Michael Chandler too, right? He loses these two fights, but I think all of us, it's one of those situations where you lose and maybe you'll lose some stock in the division just a little bit, but ultimately, yeah, all of us are tuning in for the next.
He's Michael a bigger Chandler. Star than ever. Yeah. He's a bigger star than ever, than he's ever been.
Is at worst, is Michael Chandler what, the third best lightweight in the world right now?
Yeah.
Sure.
Worth?
He's up there. He's definitely up there. Anyway, that has been Fight of the Year. We have one more left, and it's the big one. Fighter of the Year coming up next. Back to you, Mike.
The PFL is live from Chicago, April 19th, with welterweights and featherweights taking center stage. In the main event, former Bellator welterweight champion Andrei Koreshkov takes on knockout artist Magomed Umalatov. And 2022 PFL world champion Brendan Loughnane looks to start his 2024 off with the bang versus submission specialist Pedro Carvalho. Don't miss the action. Friday, April 19th, live at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN and ESPN+.
Beloved brands know customer relationships are everything. That's why over 130,000 trust Klaviyo to power smarter digital relationships across their websites, emails, SMS, and reviews. And now, there's Klaviyo AI, your guide to smarter insights, decisions, work, and results. Brands like Everyman Jack trust Klaviyo AI to personalize product recommendations that keep customers coming back. Discover Klaviyo AI at klaviyo.com/box. That's KLAVIYO.com/box.
Congratulations to Justin Gaethje and Michael Chandler for putting on such an incredible fight. And a big shout out to all of the other nominees as well, because like I said, at least in my mind, this is a very close decision and Gaethje and Chandler definitely deserve it. So congratulations to them as we move on to the main event, the Fighter of the Year in 2021. And we had some incredible year-long performances from multiple fighters. Fighters who became champions in 2021. Fighters who overcame some early adversity in their careers to finally reaching the pinnacle of this great sport, and others, dominant champions who remained at the top of the mountain. Ladies and gentlemen, here are your nominees for the 2021 MMA Fighting Fighter of the Year.
The nominees for Fighter of the Year are Juliana the Venezuelan Vixen, Peña. Cyril Bongamon Gong. Thug Rose Namayunas. Kamaru the Nigerian Nightmare Usman. Charles Dobronx Oliveira.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time. The 2021 Fighter of the Year is the reigning, defending, undisputed UFC welterweight champion of the world, the Nigerian Nightmare, Kamaru Usman, 3-0, two incredible finishes of Jorge Masvidal and Gilbert Burns, along with a unanimous decision win over, in a lot of people's opinion, the second best welterweight in the world, Colby Covington at UFC 268. Kamaru Usman is the 2021 Fighter of the Year. And with that, for the final time, let us go to the MMA Fighting panel to discuss how this decision came to light.
Thanks, Mike. And now the panel, once again, we're joined, new addition, Guillerme Cruz over there in the bottom right. We appreciate you, Guillerme, calling in from Brazil. Fighter of the Year, fellas. This one felt like, of all these categories, it's funny we're doing this last, because of all these categories this year, this one felt like the most straightforward. It was the easiest for, I think, a lot of us. It was also the biggest consensus on the website. We had, of 11 first place votes, 10 of them went to Kamaru Usman. The one dissenter was my man down there in Brazil, Guillerme Cruz. So, Jose, I'll start with you, man. This did feel like Kamaru Usman's year. I mean, again, this was the easiest decision for a lot of us. 3-0 this year. He defends his title three times. He gets the knockout of the year as well, as we've already gone over. For you, why was this year Kamaru Usman's year to own?
Well, I just remember how it ended last year. Like, he had these epic performances, 2019? He had how many times have we heard Dana White say how much he just loved the first fight between Kamaru Usman and Colby Covington? So he builds up all this hype. He's a world beater. He's finally no longer Marty Snoozman. He puts on a Fight of the Year candidate, because let's not forget, on that card also had Holloway, Volkanovski, I believe Amanda Nunes, and Jermaine Durandamy. And everyone said, well, if there's one fight that's going to be a snoozer, it's probably going to be between the two wrestlers, and then Kamaru Usman and Colby Covington have one of the best fights of all time. And then he goes out there and he foot stomps Jorge Masvidal for about 25 minutes as the follow-up, and all of a sudden everyone just hates him all over again. And then, so kicking off 2021, everyone still considers Kamaru Usman just a boring foot stomping fighter who couldn't beat a guy on 10 days notice in Jorge Masvidal. Goes out there and just eats Gilbert Burns alive, goes out there and just decapitates Jorge Masvidal, and then goes out there and beats Colby Covington again in another exciting fight inside Madison Square Garden. So, and now, right away, anytime you're mentioned in the same sentence as the greatest fighters of all time, you probably had a pretty good year. And the fact that after the second Colby Covington fight, the questions are all, is Kamaru Usman now the greatest welterweight ever? Has he surpassed George St. Pierre? That's an argument we don't need to have right now. So, Kamaru Usman went from exciting fighter to a fighter everyone fans thought was boring to now all of a sudden the greatest welterweight of all time. That's a pretty good year in my book.
It is so funny how the short-term memory in this sport works, because you're absolutely right. Go heading out in 2019, people were all over Kamaru Usman talking about how he has turned the corner and he is now this exciting fighter. And then 2020 happens, he gets that one fight and everyone forgets. AK, I think Jose made a great point there, and it's one that I also made in my column I wrote for Fighter of the Year, which is anytime you can end the year getting comparisons to George St. Pierre thrown out there and they actually feel valid to some degree, there's some basis there, that probably means you're in the Fighter of the Year conversation. For you, AK, why was this Kamaru Usman's year?
I mean, this was the year for him where I think the results finally caught up to the hype, you know, kind of what we thought Kamaru Usman was, you know, from the old the joke of the 30%, that was only I only gave 30%, and then eventually, you know, becoming UFC champion. There was still this sort of this sense around him that we had not seen his best. We know he's the best. Everyone knows he's the best 170 pounder in the world, but where are the, outside of, you know, the super exciting Colby Covington fight, the first one, where is this guy that's supposed to be this beast, as Jose said, that first Masvidal fight just proved nothing. And that's just kind of how we are. We you know, we're smart. MMA fans are smart for the most part. They know when someone is good, but you really still want to see them prove it. You know, the proof is in the pudding, as they say. And getting finishes, getting the knockout of the year, another exciting fight with Colby Covington, which I know he didn't get the finish, but in some ways I think was just as convincing as the first fight, if not more so. And at least there was certainly no controversy, not that there really was in the first one, but no fodder for, you know, Colby Covington to say, I was just blame the ref for the stoppage and all that. This is a clear-cut loss. Colby Covington knew it. He at least acknowledged that on fight night and acknowledged that he's the number two guy in a strong division behind the man, Kamaru Usman. So, yeah, it's kind of a safe pick. It's weird to because I think he proved a lot, again, at how entertaining he can be. Some other people might have had some a little more dramatic narratives. I'm sure we can get to that, some of the runners-up in this category. But if you're just saying, when you watched MMA, who was the best fighter, who had the best results at the highest level, it was Kamaru Usman.
Well, Guillermo, I want to bring you in here. So let's go down to Brazil, because we say there was a consensus, but there wasn't actually, because again, 10 first place votes to Kamaru, but the one dissenter, and that was you giving it to our man, Charles Oliveira. And when we threw this article out on Twitter and social media as well, a lot of people coming back saying that Charles Oliveira was their fighter of the year. So Guillermo, for you, why did it feel as if Charles Oliveira was the deserving winner for you?
I mean, I agree with pretty much everything José said. It's Kamaru Usman had an incredible year. He deserves to be the number one. If you think that, I won't debate that. I won't say you're wrong and I'm right. But I think Charles Oliveira gets the nod, because it's Kamaru Usman was the heavy favorite going into all those three fights, and he won impressively. He just destroyed Gilbert Burns. He destroyed Masvidal. And he won impressively against Colby Covington in the second fight. But he did what everybody thought he was going to do already. And Charles Oliveira gets no respect still by a lot of people. He got into his year campaigning for a title shot. He said he won a title shot. Dustin Poirier just pretty much ignored him to fight Conor McGregor a second time and then a third time, instead of fighting Charles Oliveira for the UFC belt. And then he fought Michael Chandler. People thought he was going to decapitate him after knocking out Dan Hook in his UFC debut. Charles Oliveira is the underdog. He goes there, almost gets finished, but comes back and knocks him out in the second round. And then he fights Dustin Poirier, who's all of a sudden the man, the uncrowned king, the guy in the lightweight division. And he gets hurt again in the first round and finishing in the with a standing rear naked choke. It's just ridiculous. Extends his record for most submissions within UFC history. We were talking about, Sean, about how we have the short-term memory in this sport. And I think it's just like the opposite with Charles Oliveira. We can't ignore, we can't let go the fact that Charles Oliveira was finished in the past, that he was knocked out, that he was submitted, that he had plenty of losses early in his UFC career. This guy has won like a dozen in a row. He's finishing everybody but Tony Ferguson. He's doing an incredible job, and this year was an incredible year for him as the underdog, getting there, finally getting his shots and winning and defending the UFC belt. That's why I think I know what Kamaru Usman did was impressive, but the narrative and the drama involved around Charles Oliveira, that's why I picked him as the fighter of the year.
Man, I want to change my vote. I want to change my vote now. You and I have been on the Oliveira is the best lightweight for in the world for a long time.
Me too.
Jose.
I don't vote on the panel, but I've long listened to arguments in our meetings about Poirier. Nah, Oliveira was always
Gui and I have been putting our neck out there with our fellow coworkers, and they've been seeing every month our Charles Oliveira support, and I do feel redeemed. And I think you summed it up like amazingly well. Yeah, and it kind of what I said about the Usman thing. The arc of Oliveira is definitely more impressive and more memorable. If you voted him first, I don't think anyone can make a strong argument against that. An amazing story, just like an awesome story. And I think you really summed it up.
And Guy, I think you made a good point when it's almost the opposite of the short-term memory problem that we usually have in MMA. Where with Charles, he's been in our life for so long, right? Like, he 20 fights into his UFC career, he was barely above 500. Like, he was sort of this guy. He was who he was. We sort of knew what he was going to do. It's the front runner thing, right? Like, we've heard it for a lot at this point. It's the front runner aspect of it. But it is crazy how it all came together for him in 2021. And I think any other year, he probably takes this award by a landslide. But it just was hard to overcome what Kamaru did. One last thing before we get out of here on this note. The way the top voting for Fighter of the Year played out was actually really interesting, because it felt like everyone had a consensus, for the most part, top four, where everybody had Usman, Oliveira, Ciryl Gane, and Juliana Pena for the most part. So there were some exceptions, but that was the most consistent little group of four that were in everybody's ballot. And then that number five spot was a total wild card for everybody. We had votes for Rose. We had votes for Kayla Harrison. Shevchenko got in there. Islam Makhachev, Sergio Pettis. You can see the table right there. Jose, a.k.a. Guy, what was it about the number five vote? What swayed you for your side for this, like, final vote to round out your ballot? Let's start with Jose.
I believe I voted for Kayla Harrison, if I'm not. Who did I vote for? Was it Kayla or Sergio? I know one of them. Sergio? Yeah, for Sergio, it was the sense where that was more of a feel-good story for me. And the fact that he has long been known as Anthony Pettis's younger brother. And I've covered a few of his later fights in the UFC. I was at his fight against Rob Font, and he kind of got the red carpet treatment in his hometown of Milwaukee, and he lost. And it felt like he wasn't going to live up to his potential as this future title challenger. He'd always falter. He'd stumble at the finish line to get that title shot when he was at flyweight in the UFC. And then he moves over to Bellator in this big signing, and he gets all these awesome matchups that I've always wanted to see, and he just delivers on all across the board. And then he fights Horiguchi, and he's losing the entire fight until he decides to throw one spinning back fist and knock out the man that never lost the belt. So to me, we're talking about a career trajectory, and I feel like Sergio made the biggest jump from someone that was dwindling around the bottom of the top 15 to just being the champion. No controversy. The man won fair and square, knocked out, like, the big knock on his reign as the Bellator bantamweight champion was he didn't beat the guy that had the belt. Kyoji Horiguchi just got hurt. And then he goes out there and knocks him unconscious. Like, he was, his senses left him. So to me, that was an absolutely fantastic moment in the world of MMA. So he got my number five spot for just career trajectory to that point.
AK, what about you?
I had Ciryl Gane at number five. I don't really want to talk about my number five guy. I want to talk about my number four guy who I had to make sure got on, who I had to make sure he got on the chart. But thankfully, it wasn't just me. It was the American Will Arnett, Connor Burks. Also, shout out to Connor Burks. Also putting Chris Curtis on the Fighter of the Year list, Christopher the Action Man Curtis, who in another year we would have had him as a leading breakthrough Fighter of the Year. Obviously, we had a little bit of a different award this time around this year, but he for me was, again, just one of the best stories. We've been talking about stories a lot. I don't know if there was a better story. I also have to remind people that Chris Curtis fought seven times in 2021. I think seven times. Or scheduled to fight six times, right? Excuse me. He fought six times, so four times before the UFC and then two finishes in the UFC. I know what, you know, again, we're focused mostly on UFC stuff, Bellator, and we do these Fighter of the Year awards. But again, you fight six times, you get six wins. Six wins is MMA is six wins. I mean, that's impressive as hell. And then again, he proves it at the UFC level, taking out Phil Haas, heavy underdog. Brendan Allen, pretty sure he was the underdog again. So it could not, these year end awards, I feel like, would not be. You can't tell the story of MMA in 2021 without talking about Chris Curtis finally making it to the UFC, finally getting some wins. Everyone's known he's UFC caliber for so long. His story is very well told. Multiple retirements, contender series. You know, he tried that. Didn't get on. So many weird near misses with trying to make it to the big show. And I want to say never gave up. But again, as we said, a lot of times he did kind of tell himself, maybe it's not going to happen. Maybe I'm going to walk away. Somehow stuck in there, got new life with the PFL, even though like his run in the league was not great. I think he got one win and retired again during that run. So I honestly can't believe we're talking about him at the end of 2021. But my goodness,
three weight classes,
unbelievable. This guy,
three weight classes,
middleweight. Yeah, he is something else.
You're right. We talk about stories so much on this show, but there are few better than the Action Man, because man, there are so many times in this guy's career where he just assumed it wasn't going to happen. Right? How many retirements are across the board on our list of award winner here? I probably zero, except for that man. He's got like three of them. He's got like three.
And who would blame him? Who would have blamed him? Who would have blamed Chris Curtis if he retired like 3 years ago? Nobody.
Guillerme, last to you, man. Who rounded out your ballot?
Yeah, I think I was impacted by the feel good story about Raul Schmanke, my number five in the Fighter of the Year, because I mean he hasn't fought in 3 years. He didn't have a job. He was a former Titan FC champion, but he has no contract. He was literally offering to fight for free, just to get a win, to try to get in the UFC, and he couldn't get an opponent, and just he was literally going to Florida to spar with Jake Paul to get paid $100 to get some money in his pocket. He was working as a janitor in a hospital to get some money, and then PFL comes around. He enters PFL as an alternate and just gets a chance to fight Joilton Peregrino, who has another surname now, wins the fight, and then he fights Anthony Pettis. He was scheduled to fight Nathan Schultz, who is a former champion, two-time champion, and the fight fell through, and he has to fight Anthony Pettis, like the biggest signing in PFL this year. He wins that fight, and then he fights Clay Collard, who has all this hype about fighting boxing, fighting in MMA. And he wins again, gets to the million-dollar fight, and wins one more time. He had four wins in 6 months, and wins the season. It was just surprising for someone who was out for 3 years, had no contract. Like, he started this year without a job, without no money, and then he ends this year as a millionaire, winning the whole season. That was impressive. It was a feel-good story as well.
You can't hate on it. You cannot hate that turnaround that man had. It is, again, a year full of so many great stories. It is just too many to pick from. But that is Fighter of the Year. Back to you, Mike.
Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate all of your incredible work throughout this broadcast. Really means a lot. And congratulations once again to Kamaru Usman. He began the award show winning an award, and he closes the show in the main event spot with the 2021 Fighter of the Year trophy on his mantle. I mean, no, it's not the UFC welterweight title, but this is a pretty darn cool thing. So congratulations to all of our winners, and thank you to all of you for not only watching the show or listening to the show, however you are consuming it, but for sticking by MMA fighting throughout this entire year. It's been a crazy couple of years. Really appreciate all of your support. And if you thought 2021 was a great year, 2022 is going to be even better. We have some cool things lined up here on MMAfighting.com. So with that being said, for the rest of the crew over at MMAfighting.com, I am Mike Heck. Thank you again for watching, and we wish you all a very happy new year.
This has been the 2021 MMA Fighting Year End Awards, a Vox Media production.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
The PFL is live from Chicago, April 19th, with welterweights and featherweights taking center stage. In the main event, former Bellator welterweight champion Andrei Kereshkov takes on knockout artist Magomed Umalatov. And 2022 PFL world champion Brendan Loughnane looks to start his 2024 off with the bang versus submission specialist Pedro Carvalho. Don't miss the action. Friday, April 19th, live at 10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN and ESPN+.